Welcome to Building Leaders, everyone, the show about the creative geniuses that are building our world. My name is Angelos Nicolaou. I'm the director at Sector and your host. With us, as always, Michalis Solomontos, our vice president. We love talking to the superstars of the construction industry and sharing their stories with you on this show. If you have anyone that you'd like us to interview, please feel free to share their contact details with us at info@sector.build. Again, that's info@sector.build. Thanks, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Julian, if you can start by introducing yourself and your position, and we now know the company that you're at. So
I'm Julian Bourseri. I'm the head of open innovation for Bouygues Construction. I will come back to what we do in terms of open innovation, but I got a background in civil engineering. So I've started my career as a civil engineer working on road works. So it was based in France within Colas. I was in charge of a region, in charge of doing concrete works. And by the time I was there, I had this idea, and I see it on site, that we had to make the exchange of inert materials on site more collaborative in a way that we can exchange the inert materials that come from the construction sites in order to give them more value and in order to get like a circular economy of it. So I quit at Colas, and then I started on my own. So I launched this project called Excess Terra, which names the idea of it. It's how can you handle the excess of terra, of earth, that you have on construction sites. And so I spent about 2 years working on this project. We did some exchange of materials in France, and that was quite a good time. And at some point, it was too early. So I decided to say, okay, I'm done. It was a great experience, but it's not the right time. So I will come back to that later. I'm now going to focus on a real job in a company and specialist in innovation. So that's what I'm really keen on. It's how can we just make bold move in this industry? Because there is plenty of space to do a lot as you are in civil engineering, in building, in construction, in facility management, whatever. So it's pretty a great opportunity for many, many things. And then I joined Bouygues Construction, and I've been here for 6 years, and that's it.
That's very, very cool. When you decided to make the jump, was it just because you wanted to be different, or, you know, did you see something? Did you have any sort of experience at the time that sort of pushed you there?
Maybe I was, I had a lot of training, and I was a colleague of mine, a friend of mine. And we had so many ideas when we were just exploring what we could do in this industry. So we spent some time, and we had like a lot of opportunities that we defined. And at this point, we started with the exchange of materials, but there can be plenty of it. And then when I ended this story with etc., then I had much more in my mind to push that into a large company that will get the opportunity to make bold move. And I truly believe in the power of startups in this ecosystem. So they are really game changers, a part of them. But in this industry, we need also to make moves from the large players. Mm-hmm. And I strongly believe that Bouygues Construction, a Vinci, a Skanska, whatever large construction companies, they handle it, they transform themselves, and then the whole ecosystem, including startups, will follow on that.
Yeah. So you saw that in the flesh. That's really interesting, because our industry is indeed lacking some consolidation. I mean, yes, sure, you know, Vinci and Bouygues, Strabag and so on and so forth, very large companies, but still it's a very fragmented industry. And that's perhaps one of the main reasons why innovation isn't really taking off the way that perhaps it takes off in a couple of other industries. I noted down that the reason why you switched is pure passion. I already see that in you. I'm wondering, how was that experience of, you know, starting something before you jumped into Bouygues? How was that experience of, you know, going out there and hustling and trying to make it work?
It was just a great experience. So at the end, I only kept the good part of what we've done. And the worst part was that we didn't get the chance to continue and to go further and to grow this business. But how we did that? First, we get on sites. So really how it happened, I was on my bike, and I was just turning around in Paris looking for small construction sites that I saw that get inert materials. And I just go to the foreman, to the civil engineer, the guy in charge. And I was saying, okay, here is my card. I see that you have some materials on site. How are you going to handle that? And, you know, it was just really the hands-on part, and that was really, really fun. So I had some opportunities from that. But at some point, I had to go to the Ministry of Sustainability of France and to go on like high-level committees in the industries and so on to push this idea of circular economy in earth materials in construction sites. And at that point, I measure that I wasn't experienced enough in this level of interaction. And it was also something that breaks me, because I was just so motivated. I spent a lot of time trying to explain and so on, but at some point it's more political, because we were quite ahead on the project and on the circular economy. I did not mention it, but we were in 2013. So yeah, it was 8 years ago, and it's happening, you know, circular economy in construction is just happening right now. So yeah, it's a wonderful experience, of course.
You know, it's so interesting, because people say that the construction industry is the least digitized industry in the world. And, you know, we hear a lot of, you know, bashing, but the reality is, you know, if you really think about it, tech wasn't ready really before, you know, until maybe 5 years after the first smartphone came out, so that it can be properly utilized in construction, right? I mean, if you think about a laptop, the construction site is not a friendly environment for it. So how can we expect, you know, this device to work in such a harsh environment? Is that sort of something that you experienced, and perhaps you're seeing the change now?
Yeah, that's one of the big topics that we have been working on that for about 6 years, following how did we manage to get digital tools on site and so on. So anyway, we're not still at the point where we can say, okay, we are a digitalized company or a digitalized industry. We got so much improvement to do. So the first point is, of course, what we say is, when you are a worker on site, we don't provide you with IT equipments or smartphones or whatever. So today, that's one of the barriers that we have, because adding like an IT equipment or devices to a worker, it costs so much. When you are talking about thousands and thousands of employees, it's quite heavy in an IT department to work and to put that in place when we are like in a large companies. And but we think about when and where did the digital tools came first in a construction site. It came from small companies, like the subcontractors, just guys like you and I. Imagine that we are like a plumber and we have 4 or 5 employees. Then we can put in place some solutions to have the planning in real time, to exchange like in a WhatsApp and so on. And so they were probably the first that we saw being prepared for a digital transformation on site. And it's incredible how fast the small companies goes on that.
Yeah.
So we are trying to catch up and trying to gather them in like larger digital tools and solution platforms and so on.
That's very cool. It kind of reminds me of the days that we got started. I actually have a video of Michalis early on jumping over a fence on a construction site, trying to get to the project manager because no one would answer our calls. So it's really, it seems that anybody who's a construction tech sort of went through this one way or another. I'm curious now, you know, 2013 is when you joined Bouygues, if I'm not mistaken. And that's still pretty early on, you know, in construction tech years. Did Bouygues at the time have any sort of like an innovation hub or anything like that? Or did you have to pitch your way through?
Yeah. So when I joined with construction, what we had is R&D departments.
Mm.
Innovation, it was R&D. And that's it at that point. When I entered the group, I was in kind of a small subsidiary, and we were doing no R&D, only innovation. We took what we have on shelves and then doing some experiment and so on. And it was just the beginning of different kinds of innovation, you know? And in 2014, we started this department called Open Innovation, linked to the holding, and we're working for the whole, for every subsidiaries, starting doing experiment with startups. In 2014, startups, that was quite new in the construction tech. So we just started to put some experiments on site and so on. And we started to do so many things after that. So it was just the beginning. So startups, then we had it entrepreneurship, We added design thinking and creativity and brainstorming methodologies. And now we were more working on like a startup studio, being able to start our own ventures internally or with partners. Then we had this corporate venture fund at Bouygues Construction. So we build up like different bricks in order to, okay, supply the R&D in the effort of doing innovation at the end, but also to do some kind of different innovation with different offers, innovation for the transformation of the group internally, innovation in HR, in legal tech, and so on. So that's now a wider area, the innovation, that it was in 2013.
Can you talk to us about that journey? So you get in and it's just R&D and it's not, you know, construction tech, let's say, focused. I'm really curious, what were the first technologies that you interacted with at the time? And then we'll get into the rest. But what were the first technologies that you interacted with at the time, if you can, you know, I guess if you can recall?
Yeah, when I went in 2014, a great topic that we have actually was circular economy.
Very cool. Because
we were at the beginning of something that we knew was coming. So I've been working on projects of this kind. Other, another project in terms of tech, it was, how can we pilot the cranes differently, you know? Mm-hmm. So how can we starting doing the first step in wearing exoskeletons? And those techs, they were just coming from mainly other industries. You know, if I'm talking about exoskeletons, they were coming from the medical devices, you know, and from the army. So it was quite new, quite exciting.
Yeah.
It was just the starting of something booming.
Did you have any big success stories that you can recall of that you tried a technology and, you know, the results were really good at the time?
Yeah. I will take the example of energy IP. You get the whole story in that one. That's why I like it, really.
I love that.
We started with an R&D project, which consisted of using the IP networks for connecting light bulbs, your devices, and so on. So everything was plugged with an IP networks. So they started with this new idea, and then they met a guy. He had like a small engineering company, really something small dedicated to electrical devices. He really liked the idea that we had at this point. So he started working for the R&D project. And at some point he said, okay, you know what? A greater and larger idea. It's just that a company dedicated to do that. And so at that point, the R&D department, they were not looking for that kind of, okay, we create a company, don't go so fast. We have so many things to, in terms of technical viability and so on, to
yeah,
focus on.
Yeah, we need to walk
first
before we run kind of thing.
That was exactly that. So the guy said, okay, I will create, it will be Energy IP, the startup. And we keep on working with him. And we had like this collaborative project working between our R&D departments and this new startup that the guy created. And I'm so proud that after more than 3 years of works, we did the first building in France with everything connected with IP wires.
Wow.
And that's the first in France. And that's huge because that's a 20,000 square meter building office. Wow. Near Paris for one of our greatest clients. And we built up everything with R&D and this guy at Energy IP. And that's one of the successes that we can say, okay, we are really proud of, because that was a big bet at some point to take. And it's working perfectly. And then we added like devices, and then they also provide with digital device platform for the users to interact with the building and so on. So we are really going toward the services into the building thanks to this whole project. And this one is pretty cool.
What kind of interactions are we talking here? You know, temperature, atmospheric conditions, and everything else, everything?
Yes, everything speaks to everything. That's really the idea. Everything that needs power at some point is connected to the network. Wow. And they are all linked together. And when we are doing this at this scale, they're just improving the facility management also, because we have every information regarding everything, and you can create like some automation between scenarios and technical devices, like temperature, like humidity, like safety, security. gate opening and things like that. So we can build what we dream building is just on thanks to that.
I can imagine, you know, even if you think from the simplest thing, which could be as builds, you know where everything is around your site, which is a, you know, it's a real problem. You know, we very often, and this goes both ways, right? Because at the time when you're building the building, all you care about is cost and you don't think about it later on. And only an experienced owner will really be in a position to say, I want to put some technology in place so that when the project gets handed over to me, that I can save costs, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now when I'm still running my building. How important do you think, or how in your experience, how important was, and for this particular project, how important was the owner's input in this? How important was the owner's buy-in?
They were the main inputs. They were the main lever for the success of this project to happen, really. Yeah. If we didn't get like the owner, the general contractor, the electrical subcontractors and energy IP and the controls, the guys in charge of the control and everyone in the same team, so we couldn't make it. That was, of course, we need new customers, new clients that knows that when you are doing some improvement, when you built a new edifice, then you know that you will get the feedback and the returns on the long term. And they knew that. This client knew that. And that's really important. And that is a big change. And that's what we are explaining to our clients every day. It's just how important is it to invest well at the first time when you are doing your building for the returns that you can have in maintenance and in terms of user experience for the users at the end.
Is it scary sometimes, especially we all know construction, and you're a civil engineer yourself and you had your own company. So when we submit proposals, sometimes competition gets pretty intense. Is it scary to try to, when deep down in your heart, you know that they should innovate and spend some more money up front? Is it scary to pitch that when you know that a competition can come in and say, yeah, I can do it for, you know, 100, 200, 300, a million euros cheaper, and you don't need this stuff, when you're still pitching your innovative idea? What has sort of the response from clients been on that side of things?
You're right. The competition is absolutely crazy, you know. So we get plenty of companies that are able to build. Really, that's not a really complicated job. If you think just that's concrete slabs and posts and so on. So that's quite easy to do. So how do we differentiate? The idea is to have two steps. The first is to like having a broad ecosystem that we can just explain what we do, what we are aiming to do at the end today, but in 5 years, in 10 years. So we've got this perspective and they are really helping us when we are explaining to clients how will the education campus will be in 2050. Then they've got this vision of saying, okay, it will be quite different from now. And if you want to succeed in building something today that will work in 2050, then you have to implement this new solution to get a building ready to new users, ready to new technologies, ready to new electrical wires and whatever. And so we are doing this first step of prospective with our clients. Second one is when we are handling the bidding. At this point, we have like demonstrators. So we have some pilots that we do internally for our own knowledge and culture and saying, okay, it works, it doesn't work, what's better, what's to improve? And we show that. So it reassures the clients in saying, okay, they are handling it, they are handling it, it works. So I'm ready to take the step further. And we give some guarantee on where will be the risk and so on. So we are taking our own part of the risk also. So that's really the two approaches that we have. First is perspective. Second one is like having demonstrator of what we've done and what we've learned with open books.
That's very, very cool. I love that from many angles. I love that, you know, a big company such as Bouygues sees the responsibility that you have toward the construction industry, because let's be honest, I mean, you know, you said it yourself earlier, you know, these subcontractors, you know, the smaller construction companies, they've adapted technology because they didn't have time, and we does have time and money. So you still take the risk in order to make sure that the word of innovation gets out there and to help you and to help educate the customers and so on. So it's a really powerful message, I think, that you're sending out by doing this. Now, I'm really curious into how this grew, and I'm curious to hear more about open innovation, because as I see here, you know, it took you about 7 years to get where you are today. So, you know, you started hands-on in the field, you know, you tested technologies yourself, and now you're overlooking a much larger part of the company and of innovation. What do you think for the, perhaps for the younger engineers that are out there that like to, that are looking at your job, that's kind of like, that's a dream job. What would you say is the trick, is the secret that helped you, you know, get up there and have a, such a strong position now?
That's a good mix of a lot of things. The first is I'm really passionate about construction. I really like that, you know, it's just something, it's a feeling, it's in me. So that's the first thing. And you cannot declare, yes, I'm passionate about what I do. It's just, you have to be attracted by something. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I get the chance, really, I get the chance at some point after my first degree in university to enter like an entrepreneurship program. And it was just a short experience, but it opens you the eyes on what you're going to do. Where are the opportunities? Where are the problems and the issues to solve also? And for me, that was just the click that helped me to say, okay, there is plenty of opportunity wherever I go on a construction site or in a contract, I see the opportunity. And just to be honest, so most of the time I spent it looking after startups, after innovation, after doing some watch on the internet, meeting other people that are explaining what they do, yeah, and just being really, really curious. And you have to take this time. And for an engineer that will come in this industry tomorrow, then he cannot have the choice of saying it needs to be in this curiosity, in this level of curiosity of putting the change. The change, it doesn't come from the top management. The change, it doesn't come from the partners. It comes from the guys that are in the company tomorrow. Mm. And if they believe in something and that they want to make changes, then go for it. That's just what we're expecting from them.
Do you ever have any pushback when you try to pitch technology or pitch a solution that you're particularly passionate about? Did you ever have any pushback either from a company or from a client? And I'm really curious, you know, when you hear a no, let's say that, you know, you get all the yeses and then you get to the final stage and, you know, maybe it's an executive, maybe it's a client, maybe it's a consultant, and somebody says no. How do you handle that?
To be honest, most of the time, it's a no at the end. Yeah, I want to be honest with you.
I love
that. We push a lot of things, but you know, some kind of lottery at some point, you have to push like 100 different options. And at the end, there is only one, two that will take place in your current business tomorrow. But for that, we need to experiment to push. But one of the first advantages that we have is that in the construction, employees, workers, the site managers, and so on, they want to make things different. And they have the responsibility on their own of the construction site. So if they want to decide to experiment something, then they will. And they are really keen on. So wherever I go on a construction site, I bring something new and they say, okay, what about testing it? Let's do an experiment and we see if it works. They really like that. They have this culture of trying things. Then we are working with clients. Of course, at some point, we're going to talk about, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about risks, about technical risks. I mean, not having the ceiling falling from 2 meters high. That's really, there is safety and security in the building. It is really, really important. So we are not laughing on that, really. That's a big deal.
Or when it comes to messing with their data, you know, or when it comes to messing with their data. Sorry, I interrupted you. I was just thinking about the risk, but please go on with the clients.
Yeah, and the clients, there is that. And of course, we have some over budget linked to innovation. So we are in a very low margin industry, as you probably know, in the construction. So when you are, you know, erecting a 100 million building, you know, something big, at the end, the margin is really, really low. So the margin for errors is also the same. So we cannot mix that up. And that's really important for us. So to only have success, because the innovation that you will put in a building, it will maybe stay for 30, 40, 50 years. So there is no chance to make it wrong.
Do you think there's hope that with technology, eventually this margin will start to grow just a little bit higher every year? And then we'll get to the point where we, you know, by default, we have that innovation budget that we can afford to play around with on our construction projects? Do you think there's hope?
Yes, I think that hope is here because there is two things that will help. First is buildings are more and more complex. For if I take a bridge, it's the same. Or if I take a tunnel, it's the same. It's more and more complex. We have more and more regulations in the sense of safety for users and so on. So it's more complex. The more complex it is, the more technology and the more knowledge and the more experience we need to have. And at this point, it has a cost, but it has also a lot of value for the end users. And so we are experiencing that when you are doing the facility management of buildings. At the end, there is a lot of value to bring to the users. And when I say to the users, then that's to the owner of the building. And that's really where we see value. It's going toward the users because they are more and more in the game when we are doing biddings. We've got more and more attention to the end users.
It's funny how it can be both cheaper for the owner and more profitable for the construction company at the same time. And then it can keep on improving on and on and on. To me, you sound like a guy who likes to take risks. You took risks early on in your career and you know you had the courage to do the things you're doing at Bouygues. I'm curious, what is the biggest risk or the biggest gamble, let's say, that you took in terms of technology or your career, and how did that work out, if anything comes to mind?
Interesting. Let me think about it 1 second.
Could be personal. Could be just you or could be your team.
It's not that much personal, but I really liked the risk that we took when we launched this building made with 3D printing. So we did two buildings with 3D printers, okay?
Wow.
The first one was with a university in the region of, in France, in the region of Nantes, in the West Coast. And that was the first one. It was in 2017 or 2018. So there are people living in this building right now, really.
Wow.
And we did another one. It was like at the end of 2019 in the north of France. And we did that with a startup called Saibi. They come from Netherlands. We've been working with them. And I cannot tell you how much difficulties, how much issues we had, what we tackled doing that. At the end, it's a long, long journey. And we are not at the end.
Yeah.
But the risk we took to do that, it's just amazing. And everything is going perfectly well at the end. So the building is on, people are living in it. And we did that, you know, with 3D printing, with this idea that the world pushed us to do. The world economy was pushing us, our clients were pushing us, internal employees also, they were saying, okay, what we do with 3D printing? Go, go, go. And we were just saying, okay, we go, we go. We try something. And we were one of the first to do that. And that's an accomplishment. I don't know if it will be a current business. And I'm absolutely sure that it will not be the main construction methodologies for tomorrow. But showing that we are able to handle that and to make building people will live in, that's just so great.
Yeah.
And we show that we can take risk and handle it until the end. So yes, this one, I like it, really.
That's very cool. You know, Mihalis mentioned earlier that, you know, we've been following your profile and we have, and one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to you is because we see this culture of innovation coming out of you and your company and your team. I'm curious, what do you think drives this sort of a passion for innovation in a construction company? And how can more construction companies, you know, get this sort of passion? If you could just, you know, give the most vague, let's say, advice to construction companies to be more innovative.
You just have to open your mind on what is coming in the years that we will have in 2025, in 2030. We won't be able to build like we've done so far. We've got this pressure of sustainability. We have to change the knowledge of the people that work, that are doing this job. We've got more robotics. We've got the data. Also, we have everything coming in the same time, just making us, we are just in front of something. So we need to change. And for that, you have to explain, to open the eyes to everyone in companies like ours, to what is coming in front. And then people adapt very quickly. And that's what drives them for change and doing different. We won't have more copper. We won't have more uranium. There is plenty of materials that we won't have tomorrow. available for the construction for electrical devices. So how are you going to build with that?
Yeah.
And that's really the challenge that we have in mind. We have that in mind. The price of water will maybe increase. The tons of carbon, they will have a price. Yeah. And you are a big consumer of carbons, of water. And the society as a whole will push more pressure on us for that. And it drives change. And it drives people to make different once they know that it's coming.
Do you like to spend time with your team communicating this message?
We spend every chance that we have to mention what we have. We have some great example of materials that we can no longer get access to. We spend a lot of time in many large companies like this one. You have the opportunity to go like doing some training for people, to train people, like not a professor, but, you know,
yeah,
to get this chance of doing small conferences. And we explain that and they are just really keen on solving that.
Yeah.
And that's what we explain. We spend a lot of time. We go with the guys in charge of the business. We go with them to explain to our clients what we've done on that, explaining what we've seen, the data that we have that are showing the messages that I'm explaining to you.
You know, it's really interesting because we started this conversation with you on your bicycle going from project to project. And I feel like it might not be a bicycle now, but that's what you still do. You still go from project to project, convincing people, educating them. So kudos to you. I mean, I think it's great what you're doing and congrats on what you've built. It's amazing. I'm really curious, Julian, how would you like to see, you know, I'm sure you have a dream, a vision for the construction industry. How would you like to see our industry 10 years from now? What are some of the things that you'd like to see us do or be?
Oh, yeah. More quality. I want this industry to go towards quality and to say, okay, once we've decided to build like that, when we have the planning, when we have the methods and so on, not reinventing at the last second, that we are not going to build like this, but we are going to build in a different way just because someone prefers it. When you are building like cars, you won't change at the last minute the process of putting the wires or changing the painting or so on. Everything is prepared. And I really want every general contractor to go towards that, every subcontractor, every customer, client, users at the end say, okay, we take a bet, we go towards that and we do that. We won't change the plan. And once we've done that, then we can industrialize the whole core team of the project, from the site managers to the design team, to the business developers at the beginning of this story. And they are fully aligned on what they have to do and on the product. That's really that, to change from project to product. That's the big change that is coming. Yeah, that's the vision I have. And of course, what you're going to do with that, then you push some robotics, then you add everything towards the user and put the user, the value that you bring to the user at the end. You have to put that at the center of your attention, okay?
Yeah.
In a very, really, really sustainable building. So did you know that 20% of the surfaces that we've built in the world, they are occupied? Only 20%, 80% of what we've built is not occupied, because you have a house, you have a desk at the office, then you have a part of the swimming pool of your region, and you have some square meter of a tennis area. And everything has been built to be used like a few percent. And so the global economical opportunity is huge. And I think that by intensifying the use of those surfaces that we've built is just the future.
That's so cool. And it makes a lot of sense, because if you think about it, you know, we're just tiny species, you know, a tiny organism in these massive structures that we built. I mean, you look at this room, it's really maybe less than 20% that we're occupying and using. That's so, so cool that you brought that up. Julian, this was great. It was such an awesome conversation. I think it's definitely one of my favorite podcasts of art. You're so passionate. It's amazing. And I think the construction industry will be so much better off because of people like you. And you know, it gives me a lot of hope. Because there's a group of young, and it's not every young guy and girl out there, but there's a group of us that's believing in this so much. And I think the future is bright for construction. And most importantly, the future is bright for the end user. The future is bright for the occupiers of these buildings. And it will just keep getting better and better from here. Very cool.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We really do hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you think that it delivered value to you, please share it with a friend who will appreciate it as well. Thanks.